A person who thinks all the time has nothing to think about except thoughts. So, he loses touch with reality and lives in a world of illusion. By thoughts, I mean specifically chatter in the skull, perpetual and compulsive repetition of words, of reckoning and calculating. I'm not saying that thinking is bad. Like everything else, it's useful in moderation. A good servant, but a bad master. And all so-called civilized peoples have increasingly become crazy and self-destructive because through excessive thinking, they have lost touch with reality. That's to say, we confuse signs, words, numbers, symbols, and ideas with the real world. Most of us would have rather money than tangible wealth, and a great occasion is somehow spoiled for us unless photographed. And to read about it the next day in the newspaper is oddly more fun for us than the original event. This is a disaster, for as a result of confusing the real world of nature with mere signs such as bank balances and contracts, we are destroying nature. We are so tied up in our minds that we've lost our senses. Time to wake up. What is reality? Obviously, no one can say, because it isn't words. It isn't material. That's just an idea. It isn't spiritual. That's also an idea, a symbol. Reality is this.
Very basic in our thinking is that we need to survive. We need, therefore, money for food, for this, that, and the other. We must go on. And we know that we're not going to get away with it for very long. After a certain number of years, we're going to die. But the thing is going to end. The thing that we call I is going to be as it is in sleep. But that between now and that happening, there may be the most ghastly pains. Not only perhaps the pains of physical disease, or being wounded, or hurt, but the pains of worrying about our failure of responsibility to people who depend on us. And we suffer other people's suffering simply because we're sensitive and have imagination. We participate in their sufferings, and our adrenaline and our chemicals respond simply by imagination to the sufferings of other people. And what about that? So we can look at these problems and say, now, all these problems cannot be solved in a physical way. That is to say, we do not expect in our lifetime that medical skill will make us exempt from death. We do not seriously expect that human beings will all learn to be nice to each other and will refrain from war and horrors of that kind, racial prejudice and so on. The thing that we object to about ourselves is precisely what we do about overcoming it. In other words, the activity that we employ in overcoming it is the mess that we object to. Do you see? And it's very important to realize. And if you do realize it, you raise the question, then what can I do? What can I do to transform the quaking mess into the state of mind of the true mystic? Well, if you are the quaking mess, there is obviously nothing you can do to transform yourself into the state of mind which you idealize as that of being the true mystic, the Christ, the saint, or whatever. So you realize that everything is phony, that all your ideals are simply manifestations of the quaking mess trying to get away from itself, and that you are put in the position of, it is absolutely necessary for me to be different from the way I am, but there's absolutely nothing I can do about it because being the way I am, I cannot be different from that. Let's say this, but if we can put it in different ways. I know that I ought not to be selfish, and I would very much like to be an unselfish person, but the reason why I want to be an unselfish person is that I am very selfish and would far more love myself and respect myself if I were unselfish. You see? So I think I've got all sophisticated saints have known this. St. Paul understood it, St. Augustine understood it, Martin Luther understood it. They didn't know what the hell to do about it. But there was nothing to do. And yet something has to be done. Obviously. But you realize when you really look into yourself, there's nothing you can do. And this, therefore, is our point of departure. Watch the flow of water when it crosses over an area of land. And you will see that it puts out fingers, and some of them stop because they come into blind alley. The water doesn't pursue that course. It simply rises, and then it finds a way it can go. But it never uses any effort. It only uses weight, gravity. It takes the line of least resistance. And eventually, now we will do the same thing, only we're ashamed of it. But we're going to do it anyhow. We think that when we come to a dead end, a blind alley, oh, I failed. Supposing the water at each place where a finger of water stretches out over dry ground and doesn't go any further because the land is too high, the water were to say to itself, I failed. We would say it was neurotic water. Just wait, and it will find a way. Now, when you find, you see, that there's this predicament that I've been describing, that there's no way of transforming yourself to become this fearless, joyous, divine being as distinct from the waking man. When he says no way, this is not a gloomy announcement. It is a very, very important communication. The message underlying this is you cannot transform yourself, is giving you the message that the you that you imagine to be capable of transforming yourself doesn't exist. But it's an image, it's an idea, it's your thought about yourself, and I suppose yourself is in fact not this, but is everything. I mean, it's just impossible to cut ourselves off from a social environment, and also furthermore from a natural environment. But nonetheless, we do think that the image of self refers to something, because we have the impression, very strongly indeed, that I exist. And this isn't just an idea. We think, my God, it's a feeling. It's really substantially there in the middle of us. And what is it? What do you actually sense? Like, you know, when you're sitting on the floor and you feel the floor is there and is real and hard. Okay, what are you sitting on the floor? What do you have the sensation of? You know, that's you here when you're not hitting yourself. Well, in what part of your body do you feel yourself, the real I, exist? We can explore this very deeply, but I'm going to give you a preliminary and superficial answer. The sensation which corresponds to the image of ourselves is a chronic muscular tension, which has absolutely no useful function whatsoever. It is when you try, say, to concentrate. Because if you want to see something clearly, you must not make an effort. You must simply trust your eyes and your nervous system to do their thing. So you just look like that. And there is absolutely nothing you can do about it by using your muscles. Do you see now why, if I put it to you in this very negative way, you can't do anything to change yourselves, to become better, to become happier? Because if you see yourselves in the correct way, you are all as much extraordinary phenomena of nature as, say, trees, clouds, the patterns in running water, the shape of fire, the arrangement of the stars, the form of a galaxy. There's nothing wrong with you at all, except that I have to add this little flip. You have in you, you do think there's something wrong with you. So they taught you as a child to feel guilty, and you feel guilty. What you are aware of as you and as everything else is all the same. All these things adding together are woven, all the different senses are woven, and you get a pattern in the weaving. And that pattern is the picture of what you now feel. Instead of saying, what should I do about it? Because who knows what to do about it? To know what to do about this, you would have to know everything. And if you don't, then the only thing, at least to begin with, watch what's going on. Watch not only what's going on the outside, but also what's going on the inside. Treat your own thoughts, your own reactions, your own emotions about what's going on outside, as if those inside reactions were also outside things that you're just watching. And follow, simply observe how they go.